The Winter of Their Discontent. The great radio feud of winter 1937 between Fred Allen and Jack Benny. That's our focus on this week's broadcast of Echoes of a Century. I'm King David McKenzie.
Enough is enough.
Look, they want me to play Love and Bloom.
No, they don't want you. They want you not to play Love and Bloom. Mr. Benny killed vaudeville. Today, the murderer returns to the scene of his crime. I have the ad right here in the paper, Mr. Benny. It says, the biggest show in town, 14 days only, due to Mr. Benny's prior commitments. You have to put it in there, you're going back with the good humor people. I mean, you have to put it in there. It says... It says the biggest show in New York,
Yeah. You
will die laughing.
Yeah.
Now, the show is over, and I'm still alive.
Yeah.
I would like to have my money back.
You paid 80 cents.
If
you want your money back, you'll have to go to the box office.
They told me at the box office you're taking it out after every show. They told me I should come to you direct.
Wait a minute. 80 cents. The show cost 80 cents.
80 cents.
Now, look what you got for 80 cents. You got the Sportsman Quartet, Marjorie Reynolds, yeah. Rochester, Phil Harris, and myself. Now, you did like the Sportsman Quartet.
Very good, very good.
Is that worth 15 cents?
15 cents of anybody's money. For 15
is right.
Good.
Okay.
4 for 15.
Marjorie Reynolds, is that worth a quarter, Marjorie Reynolds?
Let me see. You drive a hard bargain. A quarter. Yes, I'll
40 cents.
40 cents. I'll give in. 40 cents.
All right, 40 cents.
40 cents.
All right, that's 40 cents. Now,
Phil.
Now, Rochester.
Rochester, very good. Excellent.
That's certainly worth 20 cents, isn't it?
Yes, 20 cents.
That's 60 cents.
60 cents.
All right. The first. Now, Phil Harris is worth a dime, is that right?
8 cents.
All right. That's 68 cents. That leaves you 12 cents.
12 cents. I would like to have 12 cents.
Look, and I remember, this is my last quarter that I got with me. I didn't get paid yet. I got to have dinner. I got to have a sandwich. I got to have something to eat.
You're in here all day.
I got it. I'm going to be here all day. I haven't even got money to ride home. Not even
tonight?
On the bus. Nothing,
you can't
nothing.
Come home tonight?
No.
Well, how are you going to get home?
I don't know.
Your legs will give away about 9 o'clock. You'll never be able to walk
it. Well, if you could just let me have a dime so I could get back on the bus. That's right.
A typical exchange between two old vaudeville friends and two of the funniest people on radio in the 1930s, Fred Allen and Jack Benny. The origins of this mock tiff between these close friends came on one of Allen's Wednesday night town hall Tonight broadcasts of late December 1936. Benny recalled the origins in May of 1956 on NBC's Biography and Sound series.
Toward the end of each Town Hall Tonight show, Fred would feature some amateurs. It didn't matter much what their talent was. What made it so wonderful was Fred's ad-lib interviews with these people. It was one of these amateurs who was the cause of one of the classic feuds of show business.
Fred had a boy violinist on the show. He was 10 years old, and he played the B. And when he got through with the number, he asked his boy, how old are you? And the boy says, 10. He says, 10 years old, and you played the B so well. He says, Jack Benny ought to be ashamed of himself. And that's all he said. And he probably said that knowing that I was listening to his show just to make me laugh. So on the next show, on my show, at the very tag of the show, the thing we call the tag, I said to Mary, and this was merely to make Fred laugh, I said, Mary, take this, I'm going to dictate a message to Fred Allen. I want you to mail it for me. Say, dear Fred, when I was 10 years old, I could play the B too. Well, the next week, Fred had some stooges on who were supposed to have known me in Waukegan, Illinois, to prove that I couldn't play the B when I was 10 years old. The following week on my show, I brought people on from Waukegan who said I could play the bee when I was 10 years old. And before we knew it, we were into the darndest feud you have ever seen, which was very funny. And the strange part of it is, I can safely say from 6 to 8 months with this feud, before we even called each other on the phone about it.
Benny certainly did not recall that last detail correctly, as the climax of the first series of battles came on Benny's own program in March of 1937. But he got his first salvo right. At the tag of the Jell-O program on January 3rd, 1937, Jack dictated this message to Mary Livingston.
Oh, Mary?
Yes?
Take a wire to Fred Allen, will you?
Okay.
Hey, dear Fred, I am not ashamed of myself. When I was 10 years old, I could play Flight of the Bumblebee on my violin, too. You know how to spell, Signed, Jack Benny.
This mystery will also be continued next week.
Yes, good night, folks.
The following week, after Allen sent a few choice Wednesday night zingers in Benny's direction, Benny led off his Sunday night show with this exchange between himself, Mary Livingston, announcer Don Wilson, band leader Phil Harris, and singer Kenny Baker.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, we bring you America's boyfriend who can't get a date, Jack Benny.
Thanks. Hello again. This is Jack Benny, the lone wolf, talking. Can't get a date. I can have a date every night in the week if I want to.
Oh, I didn't mean anything, Jack. I just wanted to start out with a laugh, that's all.
Well, there's very little humor getting laughs at other people's expense. And that reminds me, come here a minute, Don. Did you hear Fred Allen last Wednesday night?
Oh, sure. It was a swell program. It was really great.
Don't review it, Don. Just answer yes or no. Did you hear Allen make those innuendos? You know, those slurring remarks about my violin playing?
Yes, I did.
Pretty catty, wasn't it?
Oh, I don't know. He was just kidding, and you're taking it seriously.
Well, so would Heifetz or any other musician. Why didn't Fred make those cracks when we were both in New York instead of waiting till I'm 4,000 miles away? It ain't cricket, you know.
Oh, now, calm down, Jack.
Did you hear him, Phil?
Yeah. He was very funny.
Well, that's not the point. What does Allen know about music anyway? He's just a reformed juggler. Let him top that one.
Hello, Jack.
Well, as I live and breathe and stand under a strong light so people won't mistake the wrinkles in my face for a washboard, ho, 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 if it ain't Portland.
I mean Mary. Hope he heard that.
What's the matter with you, Jack?
Plenty. Did you hear Fred Allen Wednesday?
Yeah. Gee, that was a funny program. Yeah. What laughs? Wow.
Don't elaborate, you little traitor. The way you talk about my violin playing, I ought to sue him.
You ought to sue your teacher, too.
Is that so? Well, I expected that from you. Anyway, for your information, young lady, I took violin lessons before Allen was born.
He did a lot of things before Allen was born.
Well, then let him respect his elders. Imagine saying that I couldn't play Flight of the Bumblebee at the age of 10. I played Flight of the Bumblebee so often, I got the hives.
I bet you stung up the whole town with it.
Oh, yeah?
Mary, that was a honey.
Hey, wait a minute, Phil. You know, you're still on probation with me. If you don't behave yourself, I'll make you take back that watch you gave me for Christmas.
Okay, where is it?
Well, just be careful, that's all.
Hello, Jack.
What's so funny, Kenny?
Did you hear Fred Allen? Oh, boy, that guy killed me.
Yeah. Listen, Kelly, did you realize he insulted me?
Yeah.
Now, wait a minute. I want to tell you something, and this goes for all of you. I'm going to make a rule right now. Hereafter, anybody working for me can listen to Allen's program. They mustn't enjoy it. And furthermore, either Fred Allen will have to apologize or send me a watch. And a good one, too. Come in.
Mr. Benny?
Yes?
I want to take this opportunity of wishing you and your company a very, very happy New Year. Well, you said that last week. My mother didn't hear me. Goodbye. I'll bet Alan sent him over to annoy me.
And so it went over the course of the next couple of months. A typical Fred Allen attack, in the company of partner Portland Hoffa and bandleader Peter Van Steeden, sounded a bit like this.
Now, on Sunday morning here at the town hall, the Hay Fever Guild will meet for pollen drill.
Mr. Allen!
Now, quiet. Uh-uh. The acoustics bruise easily here. I may have to dab some minute rub on the walls if these acoustics sort of...
Hello?
Well, sir, they laughed when I said the magician's hair was coming out. They didn't know I was going to pull his rabbit out of the hat. If it isn't, well, you have to make faces with a joke like that. A poor old joke like that, you drag it out, you have to help it as much as you can. What I really should do is hide that monkey on me and let it out at rare occasion. Well, if it isn't, what's her name?
Yes, Mother sent me out to get a golf club.
Well, don't tell me your mother's taking up that rollicking game of meadow badminton.
No, but our baby swallowed a golf ball.
A golf ball, and your mother is...
Mother's going to spank it with a niblick.
Well, you'd better get right home and caddy for your mother. The baby might turn out to be a tough course, you know.
Hello, Portland.
Pardon me, but I never speak to strange men at microphones.
Portland, this is Andre Baruch. Andre's taking Harry Von Zell's place, remember?
Oh, yes. Hello, Andre. Gosh, you were swell last week.
Yes.
Thank you, Portland. Hello, fans.
Hello, Peter.
Optimist in the plural, yes. Not Stuff Van Steeden.
It isn't Benny Goodman.
Well, you could be with the top of your head going into that big apple.
Be careful. You know what you got from Jack Benny Sunday night.
And did I laugh when Jack beat Mr. Allen up on his program?
Say, I nearly passed out when Fred started crying.
Yeah, when I started crying, huh? Dubbed in a cry for me. How did Benny beat me up? In effigy. And at that, he had to make me a little boy in his sketch before he could do it.
Can't take it even as a kid.
Well, Benny'd better not start anything with me, or Jell-O's going to have 8 delicious flavors.
What 8, Fred?
What?
I said, what 8?
Well, I'll just strawberry, raspberry, cherry, orange, lemon, lime, and black and blue.
You shouldn't fight with Jack now. He's pretty weak going on that
he's
diet.
He's always weak.
Say, I wonder why Paramount made Jack cut down on his food.
Well, he's making the picture for his room and board. And Paramount caught him overdoing the latter. Boy, they tell me a waiter walked into the commissary one day with 15 meatballs, and Benny ran pool before the waiter could set down the plate.
Benny's better in pictures than you are for my money.
Oh, yes? Who won the Academy Award last year?
Spencer Tracy.
And I know Spencer Tracy better than Benny does.
So what does that prove?
It proves that if Benny keeps making pictures, he's going to make fresh air fiends out of a lot of theater goers.
You can say what you want, but I thought Jack was swell as Tom Sawyer Sunday.
Tom Sawyer. He played the part like one of the Finn boys.
Huckleberry?
No, Mickey. Beating me up as a kid. Why, I could have met him in a day nursery and licked him with open safety pins at 10 paces.
In late February, Benny finally proved on the air that he could play the bee after all. After a fashion, that is.
Well... pretty good for an old violin, isn't it?
So you're really going to play the bee this time, eh, Jack?
John, I can't get out of it. I mean, I'm raring to go. Come on, introduce me, and remember that Jell-O isn't playing this number. Wait till I tune up. Just...
sounds pretty good from here. Is all right? Okay, Jack.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Jack Benny will now play Schubert's immortal classic, The Bee.
If you please, Professor.
Fellas, it was nothing, nothing at all. Well, what now, Mr. Allen?
The following week, during a visit to New York, Benny had on his program a guest, 10-year-old violin prodigy Stuart Kanin, whose performance of The Bee on Allen's show had kicked the whole feud off in the first place.
Oh, Don, did that little boy get here yet?
Well, not yet, but, Jack, did you hear that 5-year-old girl play the bee on the piano last Wednesday night?
You mean on Alan's program?
Yes.
Well, let me tell you something, Don. The way Alan has been dragging those kids up to his program is disgraceful. I think. First, a 10-year-old boy plays the bee on a violin, then a 5-year-old girl plays it on a piano. I suppose next week we'll hear it played on a raffle.
Said you were so out of wind, you couldn't even blow out a match.
Well, he has me there. I'll admit that I don't compare with Mr. Allen when it comes to blowing. Wow! Huh? Yes, sir, I stayed away all night thinking of that gag.
You could have gone to sleep and snored a better one.
Yeah. Well, anyway, tonight I'll find out the correct age of that alleged 10-year-old boy. Yeah, I hope that's him now. Come in.
Is Mr. Benny here?
Yes, come in. Are you Stuart Cannon, the little boy that played the bee?
Yes, sir.
Well, I'm awfully glad you came up tonight, Stuart.
What did you want to see me about, Mr. Benny?
Well, it's a,
If it's about the violin, I don't give lessons.
No, Stuart, look, I merely sent for you to ask a few questions. Now, there's nothing to be afraid of. Just answer correctly and regard me as your friend.
I'm scared.
Scared, Stuart? Why?
Mr. Allen said you were the boogeyman.
Now, Stuart, that's silly. That's silly. Do I look like the boogeyman?
Yeah.
Now listen to me, Stuart. I'm here to prove something tonight. I'm going to ask you a few questions, and I want the proof. You know what happens to little boys who tell lies?
No.
Well, you want to go to heaven, don't you?
Not yet.
Now, listen to me, Stuart.
I listened to you last Sunday, and I didn't like it.
Oh, yeah?
I'm going home.
Grab him, fella. Don't let him get away.
Ah, we got him, Jack.
He looks suspicious to me. Search him, boys.
Look, Jack, he's got marbles and a top and some fish hooks.
And here's a slingshot.
A slingshot, eh? Disarm them, men. Now, listen here, Stuart.
Gee, you're silly.
Now, that's not the point. I don't want to get tough unless I have to.
And then it won't be with Abe Lyman.
Quiet. Stuart Cootley, how old are you?
10 years old.
I mean your exact age.
10 years old.
10 years old, eh? Where were you on the night of January 7th, 1927?
Home.
Home, eh? And what were you doing home?
I don't remember.
You don't remember? You've been very well coached, Mr. Campbell. When was your birthday?
I don't remember.
You don't remember. You don't remember your birthday, and yet you're positive you're 10 years old. Bah! Now, young man. What are you laughing at, Mary?
I don't remember.
Now, Stuart, how old were you when you first took violin lessons?
Wouldn't you like to know?
That's a lie. Take them, Don. I don't seem to be getting anywhere.
All right, Jack. Now, Stuart, how old were you when you first started eating Jell-O?
2 years.
And how many delicious flavors has Jell-O?
6.
And how much better is it than ever before?
Twice as good.
There you see, Jack, there's nothing wrong with this boy. You take him.
Now, listen, Stuart. On the night of December 30th, 1936, you came into Fred Allen's program and played the bee, didn't you?
Yes, sir.
And on the night of February 3rd, 1937, at the insistence of the same Mr. Allen, you repeated that performance.
Yes, sir.
Now, Mr. Allen claims that you're only 10 years old.
But I am only 10 years old.
Yet you testified not less than 3 minutes ago that on January 7th, 1927, you were home.
Yes, sir.
Yet you don't remember what you were doing.
So what?
And what's the first thing you do remember?
The stock market crash. I lost my shirt.
Oh, you lost your shirt, eh?
Yes, you know what that means to a baby.
Yeah, quiet. Now, listen to me, Stuart. You'll remember what happened on January 7th, 1927. You'll remember what happened in 1929. You remember what happened on the nights of December 30th and February 3rd on Mr. Allen's program. And yet you don't remember your age. You're older than 10, Cannon. Now, come on. Come clean.
All right, cactus face. I'll tell.
That's better. How old are you, Stuart Cannon?
10 years and 4 months.
I thought so. Well, that not only exposes Fred Allen, but proves that this boy had 4 extra months to practice the bee. You're excused, Mr. Cannon. I rest my case.
The following Wednesday night, Allen interrupted his own amateur show segment on Town Hall Tonight to critique the Kanan appearance on Benny's show. He chatted with announcer Harry Von Zell.
Say, I'm not wishing to interrupt myself, but while I think of it, did you hear Mr. B last Sunday?
Oh, yeah. Yes, Jack had a pretty good program, didn't he, Fred?
You don't think it sounded any better just because it was coming out of the Waldorf Astoria, do you? I'll bet he won't get his program in there again next Sunday without baggage.
Why? What do you mean, Fred? Jack didn't pull any faux pas at the Waldorf, did he?
Why, that okay. You know, coming out, walking down one of the long halls there, he saw a lot of empty finger bowls stacked up on a table.
You mean to say Jack didn't know what they were?
He never saw a finger bowl before. He said, gosh, the next war is going to be terrible. They're making trench hats for children.
No kidding.
Imagine that guy driving up in front of the Waldorf in a trailer.
The doorman must have been plenty mortified.
At the Waldorf?
Yeah.
The doorman at the Waldorf didn't even know what the trailer was. He thought one of the penthouses blew off the roof.
Oh, say, Fred, did you hear Jack say that you misinformed your radio audience? 400 people around the country?
He wouldn't know what it meant to cater to the 400.
Oh, and another thing I thought was funny was when he grills little Stuart Kanan, the
another
boy who plays...
Wait a minute. What was the first thing you thought was funny? Never mind another thing you thought was funny. What was... Now, let's isolate that thing that was funny. What,
When Jack flew off the roof.
Well, he's had plenty of practice flying off the handle. They can't... He's been modeling for at Hammacher Schlemmer's, you know, for hammers down there for a long time. He flies off the handle, and if the hammer can't do it, it's ready to sell. But you said about little Stuart Kanan, the...
Yeah, he grilled the little fella, you know.
Oh, that little boy who played the bee. Mm-hmm. Why that big bully picking on a little fella like Stuart? Benny's a bully.
Hey,
Benny's a bully. Benny's a bully. Benny's a bully. Why doesn't he pick on somebody his size? He's the kind of a guy who gives Shirley Temple a hot foot. Why, of all the cowards, the last time he got into an argument with the Dion quintuplets, he invited them outside one by one.
Wait a minute, Fred. Jack's all right.
Why, I think I'll go over and see him next Sunday.
Wait a minute, Fred. You're not going to break up his program, are you?
I'll tell him a thing or two. No, I won't tax him mentally. I'll just tell him a thing. Settled until Sunday. Now I'm going to put my venom on to perk, and I hope to have it ready by Sunday night at 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.
Stuart Kanan, the prodigy that was discussed by Alan in this segment, would grow up to become a professor of music at Oberlin College. Did fairly well for himself. But finally, the climax was set. The date was March 14, 1937, the stage, that of the ballroom of the Hotel Pierre in New York, and it was during a spoof commercial in which Benny was singing to Don Wilson that the first shot would be fired.
You always say strawberry, you always say raz, you always say cherry, orange, lemon, and lime, you nearly drive me nuts. Wilson, but oh, you're so doggone cute with it all. What's that noise out there? What is that? What is that? Hey, what's going on in here? Now, listen, I heard that disturbance outside. Now, whoever's manipulating that foghorn in here has got to cut it out.
Fred Allen!
Well, as I live and regret that there are no locks on studio doors. If it isn't Boo Allen. Now, listen, Allen, what's the idea of breaking in here in the middle of my singing? Singing? Yes. Now, listen, Betty. I didn't mind it when you scraped that overnight bag 2 weeks ago and called that playing the bee. Yeah. But when you stand here tonight and set that whooping cough to music and call that singing, you're going too far. Oh, you didn't like it, huh? Like it? Why, you make Andy Devine sound like Lawrence Tibbet. Now, look here, Alan. I don't care what you say about my singing or my violin playing on your own program. Well, when you come up here, be careful. After all, I've got listeners. Keep your family out of this. Now, listen. My family likes my singing and my violin playing, too. Your violin playing? Yeah. You're using the verb loosely, Mr. Benson. Why, if I was a horse... If I was a pony, even, yeah. And found out that my tail... found out that any part of my tail was being used in your violin bow, I'd hang my head in my oat bag from then on.
Well, you listen to me, you Wednesday night hawk. Another crack like that, and Town Hall will be looking for a new janitor.
Why? Why, you fugitive from a Ripley cartoon? I ought to bend your nose around until if you want to smell anything, you'll have to curb. You lay a hand on me. You lay a hand on me. Anything we'll say accidentally will be better than the script. Me, Benny, and you'll be hollering strawberry, raspberry, cherry, orange, lemon, and health.
Oh, listen to that smile of beauty. Keep this up, Alan, and I'll ask Don Wilson to fall on you. And if Wilson falls on you, you know what that means.
Huh? Oh, boy, press ham.
That a girl, Mary, that's a honey.
Quiet, coward.
Coward? Yes, coward, and she doesn't mean that English entertainer, Noel, either. Now, Alan, I'm up here attending to my own business. There's no place to settle our private affairs. How did you get in here without a pass?
I made one at the door, man, and you're next.
Oh, I am, eh?
Gentlemen, don't fight here, please. Why don't you go over to the Medicine Square Garden?
You keep out of this, you little squirt. From now on, your wife will be having both ends of the herring.
Well, goodbye, Jackie boy. Take it easy.
There goes Schlepperman. I wish you'd follow him out.
Listen, cowboy, why didn't you stay out in Hollywood where you don't belong?
Because I heard you were coming out there to make a picture, that's why. You ought to do very well, Mr. Allen, now that Boris Karloff is in England.
Well, I saw your last picture, Lionel Benny.
Yes?
Until you made a picture, nobody knew what a lull looked like on celluloid. And maybe you didn't start bank night, but you've certainly kept it going.
Oh, yeah? Well, three states are waiting for your picture to be released. They're going to use it instead of capital punishment.
Wow! Now, thank you. That's right, isn't it? That's telling him, Jack.
Who's that Paul Barrett?
Stick him, Lyman.
Look what's going to make a picture. Fred Allen, the great lover. I suppose Gable and Taylor are losing a lot of sleep right now.
Not if they're listening to this broadcast.
What a witty retort. Where are you going to live in Hollywood, Mr. Allen? At the ostrich farm?
I may.
Oh. What are you laughing at, Mary?
He'll show those birds how to lay eggs.
Mary, that was marvelous. I'm going to kiss you for that.
Then I take it back.
Oh, you do, huh?
Yeah, she'd rather kiss an ostrich, and so would I.
Well, Allen, what, this gone a little too far. I didn't mind a little mudslinging now and then, but when you make those kind of remarks, it means fight where I come from.
You mean your blood would boil if you had any?
Yeah. And I've got just enough to resent that. Mr. Allen, I come from the West. I'm a hard-boiling two-fisted he-man. And you step out in the hallway. I'm ready to settle this little affair man to man.
You're here!
Yes, sir.
This will be the last number of the last program on any Jell-O series.
Next week, the Jell-O program starring Mary Livingston.
Come on, Alan. You want to go through with this?
I didn't come up here to get your autograph.
Now, listen, Alan. I'll give you just one more chance to apologize.
Apologize? Why, I'll knock you flatter than the first 8 minutes of this program.
Hold on there, Alan. Who touches a hair on Jack's gray head has to find it first.
Who said that?
Barbara Livingston.
Never mind that. Come on, Alan. Get us away. Sorry, now I sold my rowing machine.
And the winner will tell his version on his own program next Wednesday night.
Oh, now, I don't know about that. Jack can certainly take care of himself.
It's Alan he has to worry about.
Gee, I hope nothing's happened to either one of them, especially Jack.
Well, they're both pretty husky, although Jack did look just a little bit worried.
Oh, Jack doesn't care whether he wins or not. He's got a due bill on a hospital. Here they come now.
Gosh, Freddy, those were the days, weren't they?
You're a card, Jackie. Remember that time in Toledo when you walked into the magician's dressing room and stole his pigeons?
Do I? Say, they tasted pretty good, didn't they, Fred?
The bones I got did, certainly did, yes.
Say, Freddy, you remember the guy in the show with us who used to take in washing on the side? You know, the guy that did our laundry?
Say, what's Ben Bernie doing now?
He's got a band, you know, Ben Bernie and All the Sud. Say, we didn't make much money in those days, Freddy, but we did get a lot of laughs.
We certainly did, until we walked on the stage.
Yes. Hey, Jack.
Yes, Mary.
What happened to the fight?
What fight? Say, Freddy, remember that time in South Bend, Indiana, when you were going with 40?
Hey, no kidding, fellas. What happened to that fight?
Why, Don, we were never serious about that.
And how did you get that black eye?
Oh, this. Well, I was writing a letter.
Yes, I accidentally dotted his eye, Mary.
Now, wait a minute, Freddy. I slapped you more than you did me. Look at your wrist. It's all red.
Well, I made you say uncle, unquote, when I pulled your hair.
Uncle isn't the word, unquote, but let it go.
Say, Fred, here's a package you dropped on your way out to the hall.
Oh, yes, that's a box of candy I was going to give Jack.
Oh, Freddy.
Candy, can I have a piece?
Sure, but take the square ones, Mary. The round ones have got cement in them.
I see. And by the way, Fred, when you get home with that box of flowers I sent you, it's still ticking. Just put it in water.
I will. I will, and thanks for the tip, Jack.
Oh, gee, this candy is swell. Have a piece, Jack?
Mmm. Say, this is good chocolate. Wonderful flavor. What's it filled with, Freddy?
Ipana.
Oh. Well, I was going to brush my teeth anyway. I might as well eat it.
Well, Jack, I've got to go now. I've got a lot of work to do on my own program.
Okay, Fred. Well, thanks for your kind visit and apology.
What apology?
Never mind. Let's not start that again. Before you go, Fred, I want to tell you that I didn't mind one thing you said about me during our feud.
You didn't? Why not, Jack?
Well, I'll tell you. You said the darndest thing, Freddy. But you were so doggone cute with it all.
You said the meanest things. You're wacky. You're riding high. But you're due for a fall. I owe you some words.
You said I was bloodless.
You said I was tight.
You insulted my fiddling.
A rootin', tootin', hootin', tootin', ha-cha-cha.
We said the darndest things, palsy. But oh, we were so doggone cute with it all. And now we're friends. I didn't know you could sing that good.
Thanks, Jack. Well, I've got to leave you now. And, oh, by the way, Mr. Lyman.
Yes, Fred.
Now, listen, Tuffy. You lay off of my pal, Jack Benny. That's a hint. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye. Goodbye. Come on, Fred. Come on. Well.
Say, Jack, are you really glad that you made up with Fred Allen?
Certainly I am.
Why?
Well, now I won't have to listen to his program to hear what he's saying about me. Good night, folks.
The Jell-O program broadcast of March the 14th enjoyed the largest measured audience in all of American radio for the calendar year 1937. Benny returned to Hollywood, Allen continued in New York, and the occasional verbal missile was fired between the East and West Coasts, most frequently by Allen towards Benny, until the end of Allen's weekly radio show in June of 1949. On that last Allen show, the last gag was Benny's, in a sketch in which Allen tried to get Benny to intervene in a dispute between Henry Morgan and the Mohawk Loan Company. The last gag establishing that Benny was the shyster who owned Mohawk in the first place. 3 years earlier, in June of 1946, as Allen prepared to go off to spend the summer at his main vacation home he called Gull's Privy, Allen was interrupted by a tour of NBC led by Alan Reed, who was later to become the original voice of Fred Flintstone. It so happened that Allen was about to receive a special guest and the funniest exchange of all between them.
That was
was just a short order of Who Do You Love, I Hope, played by Maestro Al Goodman and his 40 men who...
This is Studio 6A,
wait a minute.
This glass booth is the control room.
Say, just a minute.
That little man with the mildew on him is a vice president.
Say, wait a minute. What is this?
This is a Radio City 60-cent tour. Okay, folks, let's get going. Hey, wait a minute. I got a stowaway here.
A stowaway in a tour?
Only 15 people paid. Now I got 16.
Who would be low enough to sneak into a tour to save 60 cents?
There's the guy. Hey, you!
Who, me? Jack Benny. Yes, guy. Put Mr. Benny down. I'll give you the 60 cents.
Wait a minute, Fred. Wait a minute. Put that money away.
But, Jack...
I've only seen half the tour.
Well, Jack...
Give him 30 cents.
Here you are, guy.
Thanks. Follow me, folks. Now, on your right is a water cooler.
But, Fred, it was nice of you to pay that 30 cents.
Oh, it was nothing?
Nothing, he says. 30 cents.
Jack, how can you be so cheap?
All right, go ahead. Be like the other radio comedians. Tell some cheap jokes. Say I'm tighter than the skin on Sidney Greenstreet's hip. I squeeze a nickel so hard, the E pluribus laps over the unum. Tell them.
Well, Jack, I didn't...
Oh, start insulting me after I made a special trip up here just to say goodbye before I leave for Hollywood.
Well, Jack, I...
All of a sudden, I'm cheap. I won't even eat in the sun. My shadow might ask me for a bite.
Your shadow has teeth? Jack, don't get excited. Look, if you're cheap, you're cheap.
That's the way I look at it. Some people save asparagus ends. It's a hobby. My hobby is not spending.
Look, Jack, if there ever was a time that you and I should not argue, this is the time.
What do you mean, this is the time?
Well, haven't you heard? A lot of the radio programs that have been on for many years have been canceled. They'll not be back on the air next fall.
Well, that's radio, Fred. It's dog eat dog. I always say, only the fit survive.
Oh, how true. By the way, you finished tonight, didn't you?
Yes, sirree. Tonight was my last show of the season.
Did your sponsor mention anything about your program coming back in October?
Well, no, Fred, but we have a mutual understanding. You see, we always sort of take it for granted.
Oh.
The season ends, the sponsor shakes hands with me, and then we... Yipe!
Jack, what's wrong?
Tonight he didn't shake hands.
That's what happened to the street singer. At the end of the year, his sponsor used to wink. One year, he didn't wink. The street singer was back in the street.
But, Fred, why should my sponsor want to get rid of me? Well, I'm funnier than I was when I started, and I'm getting less money.
Really?
Some weeks, when he's short, I take tobacco. I hate to get these big laughs on your program. I know.
Let's face it, Jack. Radio needs new blood. Who knows? We may be through.
I've been on radio 14 years. They can't throw me aside like an old shoe.
But, Jack...
14 years. And now, like an old shoe.
But, Jack, you with that and yipe. 14 years is a long time.
Fred, what has Mark Perkins got that I haven't got? Only longer commercials.
Well, Jack, you know how it is in radio. Today you're a star. Tomorrow Ralph Edwards is hitting you in the face with a pie.
Like an old shoe.
Well, cheer up, Jack. At least we have our memories. We've known each other for 30 years.
Yep. The first time I met you, Fred, I was just a kid in school. A diller, a dollar, a 10 o'clock scholar.
You were the only 10 o'clock scholar I ever saw with 5 o'clock shadow.
How I could use some of that fuzz today. I could use a good joke today, too.
The next time we met, we were in Fordville, remember? You were doing a musical act.
Playing the violin. What a finish I had. When I played Glowworm, my violin lit up.
With those neon strings, it was beautiful.
Fred, remember my encore?
Encore?
Remember I'd put the violin bow in my teeth, bend the crab, and play Listen to the Mockingbird?
And as you bent the crab, two mockingbirds flew out of the back of your pants?
I stopped every show.
Remember? except this one. Remember the closing...
This one stopped 5 minutes before I got on it.
Remember that week in Needles, Arizona, the closing act, Cohen's Camels?
Cohen's? No,
the closing act. Jack, how could you forget Cohen's Camels?
Cohen, I remember. My sponsor told me to forget that other word.
Those were the happy days. The next time I saw you, you were just going into radio.
Radio. I remember the morning Marconi called me up.
Marconi?
Marconi and Singing Sam had a little radio station in a doorway down on the east side. The antenna was a Western Union boy holding a wire.
Well, I guess
it's... jokes don't fit me.
No, they don't.
The antenna. When did I ever say antenna on my own show? Go ahead, Fred.
Well, it's all over, Jack. We've come to the end of the rainbow.
Like an old shoe.
Like, there it is again.
And I'm 10 minutes already. I've only had it an old shoe. But I forgot antenna.
Yeah. You ought to get a boot out of that old shoe by now.
Oh, I'm sorry I brought it back in again. Seems like only yesterday I ran into the May Company and said, Mary, stop demonstrating that Brillo. That's another word I don't know.
It goes
we're
on
going
top
to
of
work.
An antenna. Brillo fits on an antenna. Cheer up, Jack. When you're retired, you can tune in on my program.
Your program? You mean you're not getting thrown out of radio, too?
Well, why should I?
Listen, if my program is old stuff, you with that broken-down Allen's Alley.
Now, well, wait, I mean my new show.
New show?
People don't want entertainment today. A radio show has to give away things. Nylons, iceboxes, automobiles.
You mean to stay on the air, you have to give things away? Free?
Yes.
I'll die first.
Well, not me. I'm auditioning my new program tonight.
And Fred, you're giving things away?
Tons of stuff.
To strangers?
What's the difference who gets it?
Well, Fred, as long as I'm here in the studio...
No, I'm sorry, Jack. Professional people cannot participate. It's a rule.
But don't you ever find people on these programs changing their names to get something for nothing?
Well, occasionally we do catch a phony, but we're on the air. What can we do?
Nothing. You have to give them the merchandise?
That's right.
Now, Mr. Allen, we're ready for your audition.
I'll run along, Fred. So long.
So long, Jack.
Giving away things for nothing.
Well, all right, Mr. Goodman, let's try out my new show.
How would you like to be king for a day? And here he is, the man who will change one of you nobodies into king for a day, the old kingmaker himself, Red Allen.
Thank you. Thank you, and good evening. Did all you folks in the audience like those $1,000 bills you found on your seats when you came in? Good, and if you want more, there'll be a big bag of money at the door. On your way out, help yourselves. But the stage is loaded with hundreds of presents for the first man to answer our jumbo jackpot question. He will be king for a day. And here is our first eager contestant. Good evening, sir. What is your name?
Abner Flog.
Mr. Flog, how old are you?
I'm 98.
98 years old.
And don't pin no orchid onto me.
No orchid, eh?
That's how I lost my wife.
On a quiz program?
Yeah. My wife was 102. A fella pinned an orchid onto her.
I see.
The weight of the orchid bent my wife over and snapped her spine.
Well, that's too bad.
Yeah, my wife won first prize, but she never knew it.
Well, all right, Mr. Flog. Now for our question. You may be king for a day.
I don't think I'll last through the day.
All right, we'll hurry. Tell me, who was the sixth president of the United States?
The sixth?
There were three names.
Mary Margaret McBride.
Oh. I'm awfully sorry, Mr. Flog. But for making such a swell try, here is a gift certificate presented at LaGuardia Airfield, and you will get a brand new B-29 and a polka dot form-fitting parachute. Happy landing, Mr. Flog. And here is our next potential... king for a day. Your name, sir?
Myron Proudfoot.
Myron Proudfoot? You look like a chap I know.
I'm not interested in your friends. Start giving things away, brother.
What is your occupation, Mr. Proudfoot?
I'm a chaplain in a bakery.
What does a chaplain do in a bakery?
I put wings on angel cakes.
How long have you been in the cake business, Mr. Proudfoot?
Long enough to know a crumb when I see one.
Now, don't get sarcastic, Mr. Proudleg.
The name is Proudfoot, and make with the question.
All right. Who was the sixth president of the United States?
John Quincy Adams.
John Quincy Adams is correct, and Mr. Myron Proudfoot is king for a day. Folks, here he is, King Proudfoot. Well, Your Majesty, how do you feel?
Never mind how I feel. What do I get?
Well, First, for His Majesty from Snook's Sport Nook, a genuine no-splash beaver board canoe paddle.
Here, a canoe paddle. Oh, boy.
And with the compliments of Tiffany's, this chromium pitchfork.
A four-pronger, and it's all mine.
And from Hemingway's hardware store, 200 pounds of self-hardening putty for King for a day.
Just what I needed. Just what I needed.
This is just the beginning, King. King, you are over 35.
By 2 years.
Fine. Now, Jumbo Carter, Uncle Jim, for His Majesty. He is over.
Effie, that's what? Yipe backwards.
And here, the piston rod from a genuine Baldwin locomotive for His Majesty the King. Small locomotive. And here, from Melody Lane Music Shop, this case of 2,000 soybean mandolin picks. These are the mandolin picks.
I just keep pinching myself to believe it.
Immediately after this program, Your Majesty will be guest of honor at a banquet at Hamburger Heaven. Tomorrow morning, through the courtesy of the Sanitation Department, you will be guest conductor on the 11-5 garbage run through the Bronx. At night, in your ermine robe, you will be whisked by bicycle to Orange, New Jersey, where you will be the judge in a chicken cleaning contest.
I'm king for a day!
And that's not all.
There's more?
Yes, we are going to start right now to make you look like a king. Sam, of Sam's Super Shoe Shine Stand, is here to brush your shoes. All right, Sam.
Sam, watch out for the button.
Next, the president of the Busy Bee Hat Cleaners is here to block your hat. Take the king's hat, Mr. Bumble.
And change the newspaper in the hat band.
Your suit is a little baggy, King. Boys, take His Majesty's coat off.
Wait.
On our stage, we have a Hoffman pressing machine.
Now, wait a minute.
An expert operating the Hoffman pressing machine will press your trousers.
Now, wait a minute. Where are my pants?
Danny, for 15 years I've been waiting to catch you like
Alan,
this.
Alan, you haven't seen the end of me.
It won't be long now.
I want my pants.
Well, if you don't know what day today is.
Today is the day to get out the tall grasses. The iced tea season is here. Time to enjoy iced Tenderleaf tea, one of summer's main attractions. Yes, iced tea is raised to its ultimate best by the use of this richer blend. In fact, the iced tea season has played a big part in making Tenderleaf tea so famous for flavor. Flavor means more. It's more important through the summer months. So everybody sets out to get all the flavor going, and that leaves baked Tenderleaf tea for finer flavor and more of. In spite of melting ice, the richer goodness of Tenderleaf tea persists. The last swallow of the glass is still delicious, still flavorful Tenderleaf tea. As summer
this
comes
is NBC, the National Broadcasting.
It should be noted that NBC frequently upcut Alan's show when it ran long, mainly thanks to Alan's ad-lib regressions from his own script. As well, the audience's reaction was due to a rare visual prank that Benny had played on Alan and the audience. Benny's pants were indeed removed on stage, revealing underwear on which had been printed the letters LSMFT, part of the advertising slogan of Benny's sponsor at the time, Lucky Strike Cigarettes. Finally, Benny managed to steal the show conclusively from Alan. Fred Alan passed away from a heart attack on a New York sidewalk while strolling with his wife and partner, Portland Hoffa, on St. Patrick's Day of 1956. The following night, Jack Benny delayed the start of his own program to deliver a touching tribute to his lifelong friend. The entire nation mourned the passing of Fred Allen, as it had the passing of Jack Benny on Boxing Day of 1974. Both men had been giants of their craft, and they left a legacy of laughter that continues to this day as a marvelous gift to the human heart. That concludes this week's broadcast of Echoes of a Century. This program was an independent production by Doll Shoe Radio Creations, copyright 2006. Produced in the studios of WLSU La Crosse, an affiliate of Wisconsin Public Radio on the La Crosse campus of the University of Wisconsin. I'm King David McKenzie. Thanks for listening. I hope that you'll join us again at this same time next week. Until then, remember, fear and God do not inhabit the same space.